From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. Today, we continue our spotlight on summer music making with one of the longest-running music festivals in the area, the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival. Since the summer of 2002, Richard Alden Clark and friends have brought music into venues around the Keuka Lake area. The season has two concerts left, but Richard has plenty more projects ready to go. Today on Backstage Pass, we'll talk about the festival's secrets to success, find out what other endeavors await the musicians after the season finale, and we'll hear a world premiere. Summer music and more next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and we have wonderful guests who have been here before. And it's the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival as we continue our spotlight on summer music making. And joining us in studio, violinist Urara Mogi. The flutist, our flutist today is Christine Moulton. Welcome back, Christine.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to have you here. Gary Schultheis back in studio. He is our bassoonist.
Thanks very much.
And our violist and master of ceremonies, as it were, is Richard Alden Clark.
How you doing?
It's great to have you here, Richard. It's been a couple of years. This season's been pretty straightforward. Last time we were here, you'd done a lot of collaborations with groups. Pretty straightforward season this year.
Mostly traditional, yes.
So there were a couple of additions, the Beethoven and Bratz.
That was fun.
And you have a new venue, the Anthony Road Winery.
Yes, we'll be doing a guitar, flute, and viola concert there on Saturday night. Really fun music of Diabelli and Piazzolla and some modern works.
How do you determine the arc of a season?
I want to have a lot of variety, and I want to mix up not just the types of ensembles, but the centuries in which that music is written and kind of the genre for them. So I'll have a singer for one concert. If it's all American stuff, I can mix things. Or so then when it's the strings, doing the Beethoven trios to go really traditional, but make a German food fest and a Riesling fest out of it. And so every year I'm just trying to mix and match and make a real smorgasbord of great music.
When you first started 16 years ago, you had two or three venues that you really hung at. Now you've stretched those venues around. How do you identify new places to play?
Well, you know, the space is really important to people. You know, they like to come and have wine. They like to sample what's there. They like the scenery. And so having a mixed venue, just like having the mixed genres of music, seems to stimulate the audience as well. You know, I often laugh because right down the street from where we played a concert last weekend is an air-conditioned auditorium with very comfortable seats, a very good view, air conditioning, and a great piano, and nobody likes that venue. And all the years we played concerts there, very tiny audience. So we go into a very hot chapel right on the lake, which is beautiful, but more beautiful in the spring or the fall, and we get a substantial audience that just loves and enjoys the concert. We were soaking wet by the end of the concert. It was so hot in there, and the audience thoroughly loved it. So I'm often baffled by those kind of things, but that's what live performance is. It's a happening, and you don't question it. You just participate.
Who are your audience members?
Mostly residents of the Finger Lakes area. Some have their summer homes there and come down from the Rochester area. And we do get some tourists. But mostly it's been people who've been living on the lake for a long time. I'd love to expand on that, but I sure love my core audience also.
You, unlike a lot of festivals that do maybe two, three concerts in a week and really make it this compact thing, this is kind of a leisurely festival, kind of a series.
Yeah, it's over the course of 6 weeks or so, a number of concerts, because it's the same core of musicians playing, so we want time to play together and enjoy stuff. We rehearse down in the city and then come up. And the audience is older, as it is for classical music, and I think they enjoy that once a week kind of venue rather than trying to cram several concerts into a week. I know a lot of festivals that do that. You know, it's just down at the Eastern Music Festival, and they do 5 weeks, and there is a performance every single evening of the week. And and there's audience that go to all of them. I just don't think we have that population in the Finger Lakes. I think spreading it out is more enjoyable, and it's more enjoyable for the artists too, I have to say.
Yeah, do you feel that that way you really have more time to dig into the music that you're about to play?
Yeah, sometimes you feel too much like you have to throw things together, or you're playing, you know, we play huge programs. So when we're doing big piano quartets and big string trios, they need time in between to take place. You just don't want to step into them.
Well, I know we have a world premiere coming up in this edition of Backstage Pass, but before we do, we're going to put you, Richard, and our flutist Christine Moulton to work for a duo in G for flute and viola by Franz Hofmeister. You're listening to Backstage Pass on Classical 91.5. A duo in G for flute and viola. Christine Moulton, the flutist, and the violist Richard Alden Clark. Richard Alden Clark and friends are here as we celebrate the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival on Backstage Pass. Christine and Gary, you have long histories with Richard. You've worked for him a long time. Gary, is it, what, 29 years or something since you've been?
That's exactly it. It has been 29 years for me.
How did you meet him?
Well, I believe that an early clarinet player who used to play in the original group Manhattan Chamber Orchestra had enlisted me to play in one of our more challenging concerts back in 1989. And apparently that was the beginning of a long and successful and wonderful playing relationship.
Talk about Richard as if he weren't sitting next to you. What is it about Richard that brings you back to the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival and keeps the relationship strong?
Well, for all his talents and brilliance and creativity and all that, he remains a humorful and charming but humble in many ways, individual who's a delight to work with. We've had a particular relationship working in these groups playing chamber music where Richard really, even though he's the director and the composer, really immerses himself in a collective working relationship. So that's one of the things that's very special.
You're not in your head, Christine. Would you like to elaborate on that? How long have you known him now?
Close to 20 years, maybe. So I was doing my doctorate at Rutgers, where he was conducting the orchestra.
And what keeps you coming back to this madness of summer festivals?
Well, it's for a similar reason that I loved orchestra rehearsals back then, which was I never looked at the clock. He was always engaging, always thrilling performances, and funny, good sense of humor, but really, really engaged with the music. And not only do we get to play great music together, and that comes out as we play, he's very easy to play with, but it comes out now in the music that he writes. So, I'm an advocate for his music. We've played it several times at National Flute Association conventions, and we'll be doing one, Gary and Richard and I, in Orlando in August. So, he's fun to play with, and his music's great, so it's good.
Richard, this is a great month for you for world premieres.
Yeah, 3 world premieres for July.
One of which is about to happen.
One is going to happen very soon.
All right, so talk us through your compositional technique. Do you have to set time aside? Is there something like a ritual that you do to get into the compositional head?
You know, it's like an obsession, and it's taking over more and more and more of my time, and I love it. I'm actually was really focused on a conducting career for a long time, and it was really fun, and I got to guest conduct a lot of wonderful orchestras, but it just wasn't a stimulation for me because for a lot of the musicians, it was just a job. Here I get to handpick my players, and as a composer, I'm handwriting the pieces for those players. And some people think, well, is that a control issue? And it's like, no, it's you can't pick your family, but you can pick your family of musicians. And so when we sit down and make music, it's really genuine. And we have such an open dialogue that Urara can say to me, I really don't like that bowing right there. This is better. Well, I wrote the piece, but she's right, and we make it better. Christine and Gary are talking, well, where do we breathe here? How do you want this? What kind of articulation? Can we have a lighter articulation? I can't tell you how many times I've played these great masterpieces where I wish I could go to Mozart or Beethoven and go, what the heck did you mean by those dots there? Is that really the stroke? You know, and musicians will argue about it and fight about it. Well, it should be this way. We don't. We discuss and we play. And we are doing that with all the music we play. Christine and I just did the Hofmeister, and we may have slightly different ideas of how the phrase should be played. But when I'm accompanying her, I follow her. Conductors don't follow people very well. chamber musicians do. And so that's what I'm looking to do, to cut down on the conducting, because it isn't a chamber music enough experience.
So an interesting post went up on Facebook from a friend of mine who's a violinist, and a friend of hers was doing a chamber concert and sat down with another musician who was apparently well-recorded and known, and they could not work it out.
Mm-hmm.
They could not work it out, and he ended up just not doing the concert.
Yeah.
Has this ever happened to you, where you get into that place where there is no discussion amongst chamber musicians?
I've seen it many times. Unfortunately, I've experienced it a few times, and I simply don't ask those people to come back to work with me. And it's not that I'm right and they're wrong. It's just that if you're going to do this, you have to love it. God knows we're not doing it for the money. And all the pieces I've written, none of them have ever made money. So I'm not writing them for the money. So if I'm not enjoying that experience and that interaction, why do it? You know, it's like the family that dreads Thanksgiving because they all have to sit at the table together. And Lord knows they're going to bring up subjects or things they don't want to talk about. That can happen in chamber music. I want it this way. Well, as soon as you feel that, you're no longer a chamber musician. You're not a partner. And I think cultivating that, and when it works, you want it more. And, you know, we got it.
All right. So very briefly, we are going into our world premiere now. It's called Three Pieces for Mixed Quartet. And when we come out, Richard, you will tell us your thoughts behind what happened with this piece as you put it together. A world premiere on Backstage Pass as the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival joins us for Richard Alden Clark's Three Pieces for Mixed Quartet. We are live from Studio E. Thank you. A world premiere, three pieces for mixed quartet by Richard Alden Clark on Backstage Pass. The violinist, Ura Ramogi, Richard Alden Clark, the violist, the flutist, Christine Moulton, and Gary Schultheis, the bassoonist. So let's talk about what we just heard in these three pieces for mixed quartet. Christine, how long ago did you get the music for this?
Oh, gosh, I'm not good with dates. I don't know.
Recently, did you
have... Mid-May.
Mid-May?
Yeah, sometime this spring.
So you have, I mean, you've had time to work on this piece. As you were working on it, were you sending off emails to Richard saying, passage three in this third piece, not working for me?
Very occasionally with his music, I'll ask about a note, but it's pretty, well, straightforward, difficult and straightforward, but it's usually when we have a first rehearsal that we start to ask more detailed questions about register and articulation and dynamics and things like that.
So is it, how does that feel to be the first flutist to ever play this piece of music?
with this music, it's great. It's great. It's, The piece really, Richard says that we need to play it a lot so that it can breathe, and that's true. But it really, it comes to life. It's like those horror movies where they bring these new life, these creatures out of the vat. Like we pull this living thing out of these rehearsals, and it takes shape into something that's delightful.
What did you think of it, Gary, the first time you got your music and you started to do the read-through? What were your first impressions of the piece that we just heard?
Probably something like the vat that Christine was referring to. A wonderful vat. This piece represents for me also a real honor to be the first bassoonist to be playing this. For us, I think an evolution of Richard's compositional ability and musical sort of evolution within the pieces. So it's really a delight. It's always a great anticipation of what is he going to write next, and what's going to be the atmosphere and the technical challenge. And those, of course, keep mounting as we were able to rise to the occasion. So it's a great delight for us and for me as well to be able to rise to the occasion and really come together as a group and all play our best and do the music justice.
A little bit later on, we'll be listening to a literary suite by Richard. Richard, what was in your brain as you were putting together these three pieces for mixed quartet?
For me, it's all about color and interaction. When people think quartet, right away they think a string quartet. Or those who really know classical music well may say, well, but there are wind quartets, or there's a piano quartet or a flute quartet. But those are traditionally an instrument with a string trio. I don't know of any other piece like this that mixes this combination. And most of the combinations that I write are for oddball kinds of things. And some musicians don't understand that. Some outside groups have done my music and presented it at mixed success because the language and the color, this is very much
a lot to do with our personalities and how we interact and how we match. Because when I'm writing it, I know Christine's playing the flute part. I know Gary's doing the bassoon part. And it reminds me of those old stories when, you know, Brahms was writing his violin concerto specifically for Joachim. And we know hundreds and hundreds and thousands of examples of that. And so it's really great that they just don't come together to play my piece, but we play all this other music. And then we bring this very modern, crazy piece into it. But we bring elements from all our centuries of music knowledge and music making, because it's all in there.
So how did this combo come about then? Did you write this piece specifically because you wanted this combo?
Yeah, I heard these sounds in my head, and I just love the idea of messing with a string quartet, getting rid of a few of the instruments, get rid of one of the violins and have a flute. You know, there's that old joke, what's a string quartet? It's a great violinist, a bad violinist, an ex-violinist, and a person who hates violinists, you know? And there's some truth to that. So in mixing with the ensembles and playing games with them, I can come up with some pretty screwball stuff, but also some textures that are very special.
So we have a double string duo that we'll listen to now on Backstage Pass. This is called Madrigals. It's by Bohuslav Martineau. Richard Alden Clark, of course, will be playing the viola, and joining him will be the violinist Urara Mogi. This is Backstage Pass. Madrigals by Bohuslav Martineau, Urarav Mogi, the violinist, Richard Alden Clark, the violist. On Backstage Pass, we are talking with the Finger Lakes Chamber Music Festival founder and music director, Richard Alden Clark, and friends. Of course, when you put together these festivals, one of the hallmarks of most of them is some form of community engagement, more than just putting on a show. And your form of community engagement for the last 16 years has been going to play the kids' camps.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing about the festival. In the spring, I bring up a group and we go around all the schools in the area, Penyan, Hammondsport, Dundee, and other places to play for kids. And in the summer, there's all these wonderful camps. One of the most special is Camp Good Times and Special Days there for children who've had horrible illnesses or illnesses in the family. Camp Corey, which is a wonderful, wonderful YMCA camp. Camp Whitman, which sometimes works with people of different ages with varying learning disabilities. And then Camp Seneca Lake. And we just go in and play music from a program I call From Bach to Rock. So they hear music from the Baroque all the way up through to rock and roll arrangements to let them know all music is great and all music deserves to be heard.
What are the kids' responses?
They love it. You know, it brought tears to my eyes this last spring. We played in Dundee, and I take questions afterwards, and it was the high school music kids. And this girl raised her hand. She goes, "I just want you to know," she said, "I've heard your group every year from kindergarten through 12th grade. Thank you, thank you, thank you." And she was just so moved, and it just hit me that's the entire, you know, grade school career for these kids since I've been doing this. 16 years is longer than any of them. So many of them from kindergarten all the way through their senior year of high school have heard a group come in and play chamber music and talk to them like equals and let them ask questions about music and share stories about composers and, you know, the business of music and going to college because, you know, we all teach and try to help kids get into a career of music if they're interested. So it was just beautiful.
Although for some of these kids, it's maybe the only time they will ever hear this kind of music.
Yeah. You know, we go into the elementary school and play for all the kids from K through, and it's usually in the gymnasium, and we sit right in the middle of the gym, and they sit in big circles around us. So they all have a complete, like, right next to a musician for a view of it. How do you ever get that close to a group playing and see them interact and then let them ask questions and demonstrate the instruments for them? They're incredible audiences. And no cell phones go off during it, unlike Carnegie Hall and Lincoln Center and the Met. I have yet to sit through a performance in the last 12 years without cell phones going off, except when I play for those beautiful elementary school kids in Penyan and Dundee. And they're great audiences.
You know, Christine, this is a problem or question that has been asked so many times, and that's this concept of getting kids to like classical music or to hear classical music. And how is that done?
Live music's the best. Live good music. Where I teach, we take our group into the schools and play for the kids and then do workshops so that they can play for us, which also gets them engaged. And when they get somebody who seems like, you know, from a university to come to your school and they take an interest and say, you're doing great, that sounds great, then it gets them excited and more engaged in listening too.
So let's finish off our last music piece. We're getting all literary now.
Oh, yes.
With a piece by Richard Alden Clark. We will hear it, and then we'll come back and talk about it. The four movements are A Confederacy of Dunces, which I just read recently, A Moon for the Misbegotten, October Light, and finally, Slapstick. Here on Classical 91.5, Urarav Mogi is the violinist, violist Richard Alden Clark, and flutist Christine Moulton. Thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Alden Clark's suite, Bookends, with Urara Mogi playing the violin, Richard Alden Clark the viola, Christine Moulton the flute on Backstage Pass, four movements. That was Slapstick, Kurt Vonnegut, before that October Light, John Gardner, A Moon for the Misbegotten, Eugene O'Neill, and we began with A Confederacy of Dunces, a book that you and I don't agree on, but that's okay.
I just like the title.
Hey, you're very literary, and yeah, I do too. I love the title.
Seems appropriate for the times, doesn't it?
A couple of years ago when you were here, you were just about to premiere your Kurt Vonnegut opera.
Yes.
Happy Birthday, Wanda June. How'd it go?
Oh, it was great. Almost sold out. Standing ovations for all three performances.
So now you got to get it to New York.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is, so few people want to be the first performance, even less want to be the second. And it costs a lot of money to mount an opera, but I'm hoping. So if there's anybody with a lot of money out there, you can get a hold of me through WXXI.
There you go. Open solicitation.
Right. Begging, actually. One thing you learn as a composer is you beg, you grovel, you know. And
So now we're looking at your season, this season about to close down. Are you already cogitating where you're going to go next year?
Well, you know, I've already got programs in mind. I've already got pieces in mind to write. And Christine and Gary and I are heading off to Orlando, Florida for the Flute Association to play the Serenade, which we played here on your Backstage Pass about 2 years ago.
Right.
And I'm already working on new pieces for them. And the festival will have a real mix again of music spanning about 300 plus years. And something very familiar, something forgotten, and something new. And I think that's the world of music we live in.
Something old, something new, something forgotten, something
borrowed, blue. Something stolen.
In your time with the festival, what have you found works well? And have you found something that you thought was going to work and just didn't?
You know, this is the funniest thing. We had a dear, dear member of the board who had passed away, and when he had worked in the military, he was a data analysis, you know. And he said, the only thing I can figure out from all these years of concerts and attendance and programs and all is what venues people don't like. But he said, the programming, the nature, the timing, none of it seems to make sense. It all seems to be hit or miss. And that's the world we live in with music. You never know what event is going to be up against it. You never know what the weather's going to be like. You never know where you wind up performing or... There is zero rhyme or reason to why we get really good audiences or smaller audiences, why certain pieces really speak to an audience and other pieces just don't connect. All I can promise is very vibrant, interactive performances, musicians who are incredibly personable and really reach out to the audience, and an intimate experience that will just give them a thrill if they come with open ears and open hearts.
I want to thank you so much for bringing your music to us.
Well,
with
you.
Our thanks very much on Backstage Pass to Richard Alden Clark, Christine Moulton, Gary Schultheis, and, of course, Urara Mogi. I'm Julia Figueres. Our executive producer is Gene Fisher. Our audio technicians are Andrew Croucher and Robert Braden. I'm your producer and host. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.
This is Classical 91.5 and 90.3.